Hello and welcome to React Native Radio. This is episode 107. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our panel, we have Spencer Carley.
Hello.
Peter Pykarczyk.
Hello.
Tuning in from his couch. And our special guest today is going to be Gabrielle Peel, formerly of Airbnb, the author of the now famous slash infamous sunsetting React Native Medium blog post. Gabrielle, welcome to the show and thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Of course, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, actually. This is we really have been wanting to have you on, I guess, ever since kind of that whole the whole switching from React Native at Airbnb. So this is a really, really good opportunity for us to kind of dig deep into that and just also maybe talk about what you're doing now.
Yeah, that sounds great. Love to chat.
So to kind of get things started, can you just talk about maybe like what you're doing right now and what you were doing and how you kind of got involved in React Native in the first place, I guess? Well, I guess start with like how you got involved with React Native and then maybe transition to kind of like what you're doing now.
Yeah, sounds great. So going way back, I've been doing Android for 5 or 6 years now. And then I spent a couple years at Google working on Android Auto. Then Airbnb, working on Android. And after about 18 months at Airbnb, we had already started to invest in React Native. And it had started to transition from just a pilot to something that seemed like it was really going to be around for a while. It was around the same time I wanted to learn something new, expand my own skill set. And I just saw an opportunity to leverage what I knew on Android, but then also really try to make React Native as high quality as possible. Because I figured if we were going to do it, we might as well do it as well as we could. And I had a lot of respect for the engineers who were working on it at the time, including Leland Richardson and Spike Brehm, who were really spearheading the React Native operation at Airbnb. And so there was just an opportunity for us to collaborate and work more closely together. React as a technology was something I was very interested in. And then just being able to bridge that on mobile was obviously very attractive and a good fit for my skill set. So I joined them at the beginning of 2017, worked on React Native just intensely for 2017 to just build all kinds of stuff on the React Native side and the native side. And then, as we now know, we ultimately decided to sunset it. That was also, you know, part of my decision. It was a collaborative decision, but I was a part of the decision process there, and then ended up writing most of the that blog post, but with the collaboration of some of my coworkers. So then, fast forward, I jumped back into the Android world, where I worked on the infrastructure of the Android app at Airbnb, and then a couple weeks ago, I left and recently joined a new startup called Tonal.
Cool. So it's Tonal. What kind of work are you doing at Tonal, and are they using React or React Native? Just out of curiosity.
So they did actually try React Native. So take a step back. Basically, the company we're building fitness hardware, and you can think of it as an entire gym and personal trainer that mounts to your wall. It's just about like 4 inches thick, and it has a 23-inch Android tablet in the middle of it, but it has arms on each side that swivel and rotate for strength, and it's a pretty incredible machine. It's hard to describe. It is actually one of those things where you kind of have to see it to believe it, and it does actually work. But you can check out the video at tonal.com if you're curious. It's pretty amazing, but it's Android first. All the software on it is Android, and so it's pretty exciting to be at a company that's really investing heavily in Android and making the Android experience first class. But then there is actually a companion app, which they did try React Native, but had a number of issues and just it was just a flakier experience for them. This is before I joined, than they were hoping, and they're actually now going with Flutter for the companion app, and that's been going pretty well. So, yeah.
So the main app is like part of the hardware, I guess, and it's just Android only. So it really doesn't matter. Like to be cross-platform because they're only going to be like selling it on one piece of hardware, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So this piece of the fitness equipment, the trainer, has a 23-inch Android tablet basically in the middle of it, and it's all Android. There's no It wouldn't make sense for that to be iOS or cross-platform or anything like that.
There's just gotcha. And then the companion app does need to be, like, I guess, cross-platform because the users are going to be on different devices and stuff.
Totally. Yeah. Totally different story for the companion app.
Okay, cool. That sounds interesting. We'll talk more about that actually towards the end, but let's go ahead and jump back to kind of Airbnb and React Native. So there's a lot to kind of unpack in that article, but I kind of want to start off with, so can you talk about like the very beginnings of when you started using React Native, like where the framework was then versus where maybe it is now, and kind of maybe give us some insight into whether like you would say if you could go back then and try React Native again, whether you would just not even do so. Well, obviously you probably wouldn't if you all kind of switched there. But I guess I want to know like where you feel like the framework is now versus where it was back then. Number one, and then number two, what your thoughts are on building greenfield versus integrating brownfield, and whether or not you would use React Native again in the future there.
Yeah, I think it's a. I just want to touch on the point of like, would we do it again? And because that's an interesting one, and it's one that I've thought about quite extensively. On the surface of it, you can look at the fact that we started doing React Native. We invested in it for about 18 months. We built about 220 screens. We had like 150,000 lines of code. It was really a significant investment we made, and then ultimately decided to sunset it. And now they're going through the process of rewriting a lot of those screens in native and eventually going to remove it from the app. That being said, I don't think it was a failure, and I don't think that it was a regrettable decision either, which might sound counterintuitive, but you have to really look at it at every frame of time. So if we jump back to when React Native started, the real impetus, honestly, was that mobile was becoming extremely important at Airbnb. It was becoming a larger percentage of bookings. Hosts are starting to rely on the mobile app more and more. Travelers rely on the mobile app more and more. It just, we had to build a first-class experience, and we literally didn't have enough people to do it. Like, there were entire teams that could not ship on mobile. They had no way, absolutely no way. And we couldn't hire mobile engineers fast enough. And so we had to do something. We either had to not ship on mobile or come up with some alternative solution. At the same time, when we started doing React Native, there were probably over 100 engineers in the company who knew React. And there's much more than that now. And so it just seemed like a really obvious fit to enable some of them to ship on mobile. And we did. We actually enabled a ton of teams to ship products on mobile that would not have been possible without it. Fast forward to today, I think I know the mobile team has grown about 4x. Since we started doing React Native, and that deficit of headcount, while it's still there, is not as critical as it used to be. So most teams that need to ship on mobile at least have the ability to do so in some capacity. And so that was a big driver of the decision to move away from it as well, on top of the sort of technical and organizational challenges we had. So yes, there's some overhead now in rolling it back, but at the same time, it really enabled us to do things that weren't really possible before. In fact, like the first headline feature we shipped with React Native was the experiences platform. It was basically the first major product vertical Airbnb launched since the company launched with Homes in 2008. And that was a huge effort. There's just like maybe 100 screens. It was just like a monumental effort just to get it out the door, because you need the search and the guest experience, but also itinerary, traveling, and then the entire host experience to manage their experiences and whatnot. And so it just, there was no way they could have done that with the number of native engineers they had back in 2016. So really a huge effort. And we got a lot out of React Native, even though we're moving away from it.
That's interesting. So that kind of gives a lot more insight. So you're basically saying, and this is actually really, really, really interesting, that a company as big and as well-funded and well-known and successful even as Airbnb even has issues, you know, getting the number of quality native engineers. Because I know that one of the reasons that React Native became popular in the first place is that there were companies that needed to ship native apps, but they were unable to find and hire native engineers as well. So that kind of, and for the typical startup, you kind of parallel that against a company like React, like Airbnb, and you start seeing how serious maybe the drought of talent or available engineers was back then. And probably still is today.
Even still, it's a huge challenge to hire good mobile engineers, Android, iOS, cross-platform, and engineers in general, but particularly on mobile, it's a challenge even for some of the biggest companies out there.
So does anything change with the React Native bridge or rewrite? Do you think that, I guess it's hard to say, do you think things would be different because we don't know what that's going to look like yet? But for companies that are, you know, I think Airbnb is a leader or one of the leaders in like the mobile space. And a lot of people are looking at Airbnb and asking themselves the same question. Should we do a rewrite? Should we wait for this bridge? Do you have anything to sort of like any advice you can share with folks listening about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm very, very curious to watch this space. That being said, I want to like caveat any bridge and or fabric discussion with the fact that it's just one slice of the pie. I think that there's this Medium article is five parts for a reason. There's about 50,000 reasons technically, organizationally, why it worked or didn't work or was challenging or left a lot of open questions. And so, I mean, one of them was certainly the complications and sort of overhead with writing these bridges, both technically, but also just the asynchronicity of it did cause a number of issues or made things challenging. I think that kind of solidifying the underlying foundation and making synchronous operations easier are definitely going to help a lot. It's going to open up a lot of new doors, particularly for things like gestures or long infinite lists using like UI collection view or recycler view. I think those are going to open up some major opportunities for people working in React Native. That being said, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I think they're going to release it, then there'll probably be a stability period. And then the community also has to embrace it. And they're going to start writing libraries on top of it and things like that. So I think there's still some time, and I'm rooting for good technology. And so I hope that it works really well and that it solves a lot of problems. But I think we need to just see what that looks like. Because there's not a lot of information to go on right now. And I haven't started digging through their source because I don't work on it anymore. So I guess we'll see there.
Cool. That's a really good answer. What about Flutter? So you mentioned Flutter earlier ago. How do you feel about Flutter versus React Native? Have you been able to use that framework yourself?
So I have to admit, I'm going mostly on anecdotal evidence here. I've talked to a lot of people working on Flutter, including here at Tonal. And I have not myself worked in it very much, only very, very, very limited amounts in Flutter. That being said, I do see some sort of directional differences between Flutter and the community versus React Native. Anecdotally, I was just at DroidCon New York, and I've been there for a few times. And a couple years ago, let's see, like 3 years ago, basically there was very little talk of cross-platform or native or these frameworks. Basically had almost no presence. Then last year, I was still working on React Native, and every time I talked about it, people were like, oh, like kind of cringed a little bit. There was a lot of almost resentment or a lot of uneasiness towards it among the native community. But part of it was from people's experiences where it was either flaky or inconsistent or unreliable for them. Whereas this year, Flutter was everywhere. And there were a lot of formerly Android engineers who have been using Flutter and been very happy with it. So this is anecdotal, but the sentiment does seem much more positive. That being said, I think that some of the directions they've taken do have some major disadvantages versus React Native. One, the Dart and Flutter ecosystem is tiny compared to JavaScript and React. One of the nice things about React Native is that you can leverage the entire React community because it is, in fact, React. And so you can use your NPM packages and everything like you're used to. You can share infrastructure with web. If you have a question, you can look up a React question on Stack Overflow. And so you're in good shape there. So that's a major advantage of a React Native that I don't think Flutter has. But anecdotally, it's hard to argue with the fact that people seem to be enjoying using Flutter. And it seems, again, anecdotally, it seems like the foundation of Flutter does seem to be a little bit more stable and more reliable. Maybe part of the reason for that is that they've taken a different approach with views and the way the views are rendered. Whereas React Native, they wrap the native view hierarchy and sort of emulate everything on Android and iOS using Flexbox and Yoga. But it does mean that sometimes it's not perfect and there are inconsistencies between the platforms, and you will actually see differences where you write on Android and it looks different on iOS or vice versa. Whereas in Flutter, they draw directly to the display lists with Skia on Android, and I'm not sure on iOS, but they're basically sending the native graphics calls down. And so it's guaranteed to be consistent. But it does mean that they have to re-implement the entire widget view system themselves. So you cannot wrap native views. They had to re-implement all the material design and what they call the Cupertino views on iOS if you do want it to feel native. Things like ripples had to be re-implemented. If you wanted to use something like Lottie on in Flutter, I don't think that that's possible yet. Whereas in React Native, that was trivial. It's just wrapping a native view. So there are some fundamental differences I think are important to consider depending on what you're doing, but it's another tool out there, and I wish them the best as well, because the better technology gets, there's great ideas everywhere and it's good for everyone. So
yeah, totally agree. I think it's really interesting to watch the way that each project is handled and managed by the actual companies. And you mentioned that the React ecosystem is so much bigger and has so many more people like contributing to it, like as of now, I would say. And that's true. But what I've noticed with Flutter is that the team actually behind the project is actually managing and creating and maintaining a lot of the different pieces that React Native doesn't have as part of the core. So things like navigation and styling libraries and I think there's a few other things that are like just part of the core Flutter, whereas React Native, they just kind of aren't there, and the community is relied upon to kind of make stuff like that. And that's kind of like a double-edged sword, because it is good that you might have more different people doing stuff, but maybe someone is building something and then they get tired of maintaining it or whatever, and it's just not maintained anymore. Have you seen some of that within the Flutter community, whereas that seems to be like the case?
I honestly can't speak to that in the Flutter community, but certainly in React Native, there were a number of libraries where I would say on average it was harder to find high quality libraries in the React Native community versus Android or iOS. And part of the problem is it's not like the engineers are worse or anything, but I think it's fundamentally more difficult to write a high quality React Native library than it is Android or iOS, because you have to do it on three platforms. And like I challenge you to find an engineer who's an expert at all three platforms, React, Android, iOS, plus React Native. It's a really hard problem, and making it work well, being high quality, consistent, and making the APIs canonical for all the platforms is really difficult. And so even little things like the way that you add the dependencies on Android is generally non-standard. You see a lot of React Native libraries having you like go to your Gradle file and like link to the source code in node modules seems insane coming from an Android developer who's used to everything being on Maven Central. So you look at that and you're just like, what is going on? Like these are major libraries and they're like, you're linking to source and node modules. And it's, you see a lot of non-standard stuff like that, or just, frankly, just more bugs and inconsistencies. It'll work on iOS, not Android, or vice versa. And it's a hard problem. And I don't blame the engineers working on it because it's difficult, but that is just the reality of the situation that we faced.
So you mentioned that native engineers seem to be more willing to give Flutter a shot. I think I've seen that as well. I'm wondering, do you think part of that has to do with the fact that they're using Dart, which is like a typed language versus JavaScript?
So I would say maybe a little bit, but that being said, you can use TypeScript with React Native, and TypeScript is a great language that also that has a much larger ecosystem and great tooling around it, thanks to the work Microsoft has done there and with VS Code. So I think that, you know, TypeScript is almost an equally good option from that perspective.
Okay. And then my last question before Peter, I think he has another question. Like if all things being considered equal, as far as like the availability of third-party libraries, let's just say that everything that you needed was available for React Native as well as Flutter. Are there any performance, I would say, like improvements, one platform over the other, based on what you know at this point? Because I think you probably know a little more about Flutter, or you maybe have a deeper understanding for sure around the actual native platforms that are like underlying these things. Like, do you see that one would be more performant in like the day-to-day like running of an app?
So it's a little bit complicated. So you have to look at performance on a couple of different axes. How fast it takes a change to appear in screen. Another is the jankiness of the view itself. And another is just the general reliability and consistency. So I think we can break it down on all three. So as far as the time it takes for a data change to appear on the screen, I think React Native is at a disadvantage versus Flutter. I think that with Flutter, because Dart compiles to native code and everything runs like natively in the same thread, if you make a change, you can dispatch it immediately synchronously. Or even worst case, like you post it one frame or something like that. So 16 milliseconds at the worst. React Native, you have to do a number of different thread jumps. So you have to go from JavaScript, then to Yoga, and then to the layout thread. And so because you're hopping between these different threads, it's not going to be janky in the screen, but there is a lag time from just to get the data across the different threads and to run it in different places. So then the second one is the jankiness, the UI, you know, jankiness. It's hard to say with the output of like sort of optimized Yoga performance versus the Skia drawing that Flutter does. I think that there's probably opportunities for both of them to optimize quite a bit. So I would want to be rigorous with my comparison there. And I honestly don't have the information to do so. And then the third one is the reliability. And I actually think that React Native is at a bit of a disadvantage here as well. It's doing a lot with Yoga and to try to optimize things, but it can be heavily dependent on, you know, it maps your React components to some native view hierarchy. And it does so in a highly, you know, they put a lot of work into making that process work well. But we did encounter times where everything was perfect, no jank, no scroll performance issues. But there were other times where the screen would be janky or laggy, and it can be very hard to debug why in React Native. Is it because of your components? Is it because of Yoga? Is it because of a device? Or if it's good on Android, not iOS, or vice versa? Actually fixing some of those performance problems on React Native can be very challenging.
I think Android and iOS engineers have been spoiled with like how amazing and fluid performance really looks like on a mobile device. Whereas a lot of us using React Native came from the web platform, whereas we know it takes a lot for things to look nice and fluid, right? And most of the time we can't even get it. So when we look at something on React Native, we're like, holy cow, like this is so much more fluid and so nice, right? Whereas our peers who have been writing mobile apps for all these years are like, I don't know about that. They can see the little thing that we don't have an eye for it yet, right? So I think that's sort of like the big difference in terms of like web versus native.
That's a really interesting point, and I had actually never considered that exact point. There could be something there. That's true. Very interesting.
I also think I have been intrigued by Flutter. I think it's really cool, but to your point, the whole Dart community is pretty small and just like resources are hard to come by. But that's sort of why I'm excited for Reason, because it's sort of Reason to JavaScript to React Native is going to be a little funky for a little while. But as soon as we can go from Reason to Native, I think that'll give us something that gives us the same sort of performance that you see on Flutter apps, but still sort of following the React Native sort of DSL that we've all come to know and love.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super interested in seeing that whole Reason to Native story. It's pretty, from what I understand, it's kind of a long way away, like comparatively to where we are, you know, with these other two options. But definitely interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, so I mean, the Reason thing is very interesting. And again, I have to admit, I haven't played around with it extensively yet. But just it does add an additional consideration for any team considering it, in that it's another thing for people to learn. One of the advantages of React Native with vanilla JavaScript or even TypeScript is that coming from web, you can just pick it up right away. You can just jump right in. And I mean, we saw people from web on board onto React Native in like 2 days. It was incredible to see them transition over so quickly. And adding overhead there, I think it's not only harder for them, but it becomes initially a harder sell just in general, because you have to, there's an additional overhead you're going to have to incur for anyone who wants to jump on board.
So prior to making the decision to sunset React Native, I'm curious, like, what are like one or two specific issues that you guys were having while working with React Native? And until making the decision to sunset it, how did you guys go about like mitigating those issues among the different teams using it? Like, was it just kind of brute force, just try to make it work? Or was there some processes you guys like established to work through some of those issues?
Yeah, so I want to caveat it by saying there was no one or two issues that were like the reasons or like things that are like the one and only reason why we're sunsetting it or why React Native is bad or good. Hence why it was a 5-part Medium post. I wanted to make sure we made it clear that it's a very nuanced and broad picture. But some of the challenges we faced were less technical and more just organizational. I think it's really challenging to build a hybrid app team at scale. There was basically just a simple question, simple sounding question, like, should we go native or React Native? It is so difficult to answer at scale, and certainly in any generic or broadly applicable way. Like, we, one part of our job on the infrastructure team maintaining React Native was to basically work with teams to answer this question. And I still, you know, a year passed when we initially started to think about sunsetting it, I still don't have any good answer in a generic way for this question. It depends so much on what you're trying to build, what you're integrating with, who you have on your team, who you think you might have on your team, who you think you might have on your team in the future, you might have to integrate with in the future. It's just so complicated. And I think this is absolutely not React Native specific. This 100% applies to Flutter or any other cross-platform framework, where you have to be aware that it's a completely different platform in the code base, and they don't necessarily integrate together super well. So let's say you build like geofencing infrastructure and you have that natively on Android and iOS. Now, if you want a geofence feature in your team and you're trying to decide where to go, you have to consider the fact that if you just want to add a geofence, you now have to do all the bridging and make sure that the APIs line up. Now you own that, you have to maintain it forever. And then if you want to like share your state with another screen that's in the middle of a flow, you have to figure out how to parcel and unparcel all your state. And so it introduces a number of unique challenges in addition to all the benefits that you get out of it. So that's definitely a big one. And I do not know how to answer that today.
Yeah, cool. That's interesting to hear. Just like any decision in anything, especially in technology, like there's no cut and dry answer. You know, what is the best stack to use to build, you know, the next Facebook? Like there's going to be so many different factors. And it's interesting to hear, especially my perspective where I've only worked in teams of like 5 developers, like, you know, how much the organizational considerations really factor into technical decisions that you make, and just how that can really shape and influence the technology decisions that you make building out these larger products?
Yeah, absolutely. It introduces a lot of unique challenges. I mean, I think the same would apply to a small team. If you had like a small team working on a brownfield app, then it's, you'll have a number of the same challenges and a number of unique challenges there as well.
And I think that one thing is just that's a big fact is that mobile development is so hard just in general. And then trying to make an abstraction that works cross-platform to make it, actually work consistently is actually just a miracle that it's even out there in the first place. And the fact that we have, two good options now is kind of crazy. It's when you think about how much is work is actually being abstracted away for you in Flutter and React Native, it's actually pretty amazing. But native development is just so hard in general. So, and I'm sure like with Gabrielle, you have so much experience with Android. I'm kind of curious to hear about like what challenges that native developers kind of like face on an everyday basis versus like, and kind of what something like Flutter and React Native like helps with other like things that we may not be aware of. Because I know as a React Native developer, we have our own bugs and issues that we run into. We talked about having like inconsistent third-party libraries and maybe dealing with like node modules and just dealing with layouts and stuff. But I'm kind of curious, like, what issues do people using writing native code run into that something like React Native and Flutter help fix that we might not be aware of?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the ball goes both ways in all these situations. So definitely a very, very large burden for mobile engineers, and is both on product engineers or people working on infrastructure, is around build times. Build times are, for a large app, can be brutal. At Airbnb, we invested an incredible amount of resources into building just infrastructure to alleviate build times. So we switched from Gradle to Buck. We built special infrastructure so you could build like a thin slice of the app that only have the features that you're working on. And so, but even so, like when you're compiling, your computer slows down and it has to reinstall, relaunch the app. There's, there's just to write code and have it show up on your screen. In the best case, takes like 15 or 20 seconds in the very, very best case. But in the worst case, can take 10, 15 minutes sometimes. So that, it's a huge burden when you're just trying to get your work done. And then with React Native and Flutter, the ability to just write code, hit save, and have it like immediately show up on the screen is amazing. It's like, it's truly a game changer in terms of just the way that you think actually changes when your iteration speed is that high. You experiment with more things, you try more options, and I think you can wind up in a better place if you can iterate on the order of a couple seconds instead of 30 seconds or even minutes. So that's one for sure. And then I know on Flutter, from the people I've talked to there, their hot reloading works well, and including with the state of the screen. With React Native, we did kind of cold restarts. So it would restart the screen, but we would clear out Redux state and component state because we saw some issues trying to do the hot stateful reloading work on React Native, but still, even with the cold restarts, it worked well. And on Flutter, apparently, these hot, like stateful restarts are actually pretty reliable. So that's great. Huge, huge, huge win at both these frameworks. Another one, I don't know if it's possible on Flutter, but certainly is with React Native, is code push. So native developers have to go through the App Store or the Play Store in order to push an update. So even if something is as simple like a one-line bug fix for a crash that happened in release, if you have code push set up on React Native, you can deploy over-the-air updates, which is incredible. We were working on our own in-house code push that was going to integrate into some of our infrastructure at Airbnb. And we had long-term plans to start with hot fixes, but then ultimately get to the point where we could even consider doing something like continuous deployment on mobile, which is not only unheard of, but actually impossible without something like React Native.
Yeah, totally. A lot of the companies that I did consulting for when I was doing React Native training, as my full-time job, a lot of the people that were using React Native, one of the main selling points was that ability to send over-the-air updates. Is that something that can be done using Flutter, or is that something purely JavaScript?
So I'm going to caveat with I don't know, but I would say it's less likely because it gets compiled. So, someone listening to this podcast probably knows the answer better than me, and I don't want to offend them if I say the wrong thing there. So,
interesting. Yeah, I haven't looked into it either. I never even thought about it actually until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, we talked about Tonal, like the new company that you're working with now. I'm kind of curious, what is the culture like there compared to like a traditional startup, and like what drew you to that company?
So yeah, it's sort of funny how this worked out. Is I was at Airbnb and I wasn't actively looking to leave at all, but then this recruiter reached out to me and he said, "Hey, we're working on this thing. It's kind of at the intersection of fitness and data and machine learning and hardware, and it's not an app and it's not a wearable, and everyone who's come in has seen it has fallen in love." And I'm not one to fall. It's very rare that I end up replying to a lot of these cold recruiter emails, but I have to say I was a bit intrigued. And he enticed me by saying it was a 10-minute walk from my current office. So I came in and I checked it out. I encourage you to just check out our website. It's tonal.com, because it is in fact unlike anything I've ever seen before, and it actually works. But yeah, I came in and I saw this hardware, and it's tiny. It's like, it's sleek enough that you could like mount it in your living room, but it's strong enough that you can do a 200-pound squat on it. And I picked it up, did a bicep curl. It felt just like weights. Did a lat pull down, felt just like weights. Then the screen comes on and there's like a personal trainer who's walking you through one of the best workouts I've ever had. And it was one of those things where when I saw it, I was like, this is just so obviously the future of fitness. It's like, as everything else is in the 20th century, and this is the first thing in fitness that's actually modern and new.
Yeah, I'm checking out the video now. This is freaking cool as hell.
Yeah, it's an incredible. It's like there's so much potential in it too. So, you know the weights, they're all, it's controlled with software, and it's not like a high vaporware thing. Like, it actually works. It can do up to 100 pounds per arm. And they can measure the distance of the cable as it's, you know, to like a millimeter precision, and adjust the weights on the fly. So you can do things. You can simulate chains. So as you lift the weight off the ground, it gets heavier.
Or
you can adjust the weight mid rep to maybe target certain muscle groups, or who knows. I mean, there's a lot of potential here, and for V1, it's already one of the best workouts I've ever had, but I think that because it's all controlled with software, there's just so much potential to make it like a order of magnitude better, both safer, healthier. You're going to get stronger. You're going to feel better. You're not going to hurt yourself, hopefully, as frequently. I just see so much potential in this thing. I couldn't, I went back to work, but then I couldn't stop thinking about it. So that's how I knew I had to make the switch.
That's cool. So, what part of the team are you working on? Are you working on the hardware interfacing application that's like the Android app, or are you working on the mobile companion, or are you still too early to kind of know exactly where you're going to be?
Yes, I'm working on the trainer on that piece of hardware. It's, like I said, it's basically a 23-inch Android tablet, and so there's a lot of work to be done there. It's really the bread and butter of the company right now is this trainer, and it's also Android. So, and I'm also, I like to work out and stay healthy. So it was pretty much a perfect fit there.
Is the Android tablet something that y'all made custom, or is there something that just like gets that big?
It's kind of like a white label solution where we worked with our manufacturers they sell it as kind of like a unit, and then you work with them to integrate it into your hardware. So I imagine it's not too dissimilar to like, the Samsung smart TV or a smart refrigerator or something like that, where you start with a tablet, but then you kind of splay it open on the inside and integrate it into your hardware. So yeah, we did.
Cool. So like all the sensors and stuff, is that something that you're like manufacture through in there, or do you work on the sensors in-house?
Sensors meaning?
Like knowing how much like tension there is, or
That was done in-house. Yeah. So kind of the special sauce is all of the weights and the weight control and stuff like that. So we did a lot of in-house work for that. But as far as just like an Android screen that we can run an app on, that's the thing that we can white label.
So in terms of like working with like the Android API, is there like a special way to like, do you plug these sensors in through USB and then like you write the APIs yourself? Like I've never really like connected anything like that to my phone. So how does that all kind of work? You know, like how do you start communicating with those things? Is it like Bluetooth or?
Yeah. So there's a physical connection, and being one weekend, I couldn't tell you all the technical details of how it works, but ultimately there's a service running in Android that connects to these boards. And then you have an ADL binder interface to get that data into your app.
Oh, okay, cool. So, it's something similar to just like an API that you'd be using. It's hosted somewhere, except it's like local, right? And there's just some sort of bridge that talks to that service.
Yeah. Imagine like you were in a normal app, you have access to like the Bluetooth controller and you can communicate with the Bluetooth device. It's something similar, except we just had to build it ourselves.
Oh, that's super, super cool. Nice.
That's interesting.
We're hiring, so if you guys want to work on it, definitely reach out because there's endless work to do and so much potential.
I'm in San Francisco a lot. I'd love to actually come by there and see the office and check it out. Actually, that sounds cool.
Would love to have you. Absolutely.
I'm really the most intriguing thing I've learned today talking to you is that a recruiter recruited one of the best engineers at Airbnb to go work for someone else. That's
I think if you saw this thing, you would probably think the same.
That's really cool though. I mean, it sounds like a really cool thing to be working on. I mean, after looking at the website, yeah, it definitely seems interesting. So, is there anything you wanted to kind of touch on before we start wrapping up the show and go to our picks?
No, let's move on.
Okay, cool. So we are going to do our set of picks now. We kind of go over a few things that we're interested in lately and kind of touch on those. So I'll first start with Spencer. Spencer, do you have any picks today?
I do. So my first pick is the React Native Calendars package by Wix. It's just a thing I've been using on two client apps lately, and it's just every time I use it, there's just it covers like every use case I need. So it's like, it's just a great package to build your calendars in React Native. And then my second one is a book I just finished this morning, and that's called Deep Work, Rules for Focused Success in a Distracted World by Cal Newport. It was just a really insightful book because it's something I kind of struggle with. Like when I'm really programming and getting into the code, like I can go deep, I can get a lot done and, you know, a nice 2-hour stretch. But for other tasks, like it's very easy to get distracted, and he kind of gives a few suggestions to dealing with and managing that. I know I'm part of like 6 Slack channels, so kind of just like, how do I manage all of that and manage this inbound communication that I've got? So it's a solid book. It's a quick, I listened to it. It's a good narration on Audible, so definitely suggest that.
All right. Well, Peter, do you have any picks?
Yes. So by the time everybody is listening, we'll probably be extending our alpha for DraftBit. DraftBit is a company that I've been working on for the past half a year or so, and we are a drag and drop builder for React Native. We are getting ready to do like an invite-only preview, so if you're interested, you can sign up at draftbit.com. That's pick number one. Pick number two is, I can't do pick number two because the conference is going to be over. Anyway, so that's just my main pick. Look out for this drag and drop app builder for React Native called DraftBit.
All right. Gabrielle, do you have any picks?
I do, and it's one that we worked on at Airbnb. It's called Mavericks, MVRX. It's an Android framework that is actually sort of inspired from some of the learnings we had doing React Native using this reactive programming model. But then we sort of took some of the concepts and built this framework directly on Android using Android architecture components, view models, and some basically standard Android things right into Android. And we ended up building this framework that is honestly like the most fun I've ever had writing Android code. We had, you know, initial pilot with 14 engineers at Airbnb, and 13 of them rated it an 8 out of 10 or higher. And then it sort of started just taking off and quickly became the de facto way to write product at Airbnb, just like almost right away, because it's just really fun. It works really well, and it makes things a lot easier. So I've had a lot of fun with that, starting to experiment with it here at Tonal. And it's just it makes writing native Android just a breeze and a lot of fun. So it's gotten me very, very excited about Android again. So check it out. It's MVRX. It's on the Airbnb GitHub repo.
Cool. I think I saw someone tweeting about that last week. So my pick is going to be a book that I just started, but it's actually a book that I've been meaning to read for a long time. It's called Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your American History Textbook Got Wrong. And if you've ever wondered if you've been taught like a certain flavor of American history growing up here in the United States, this kind of gives you another take on American history, not really American history, but world history. And, you know, you start learning more. I mean, if you've kind of, if you're well read, you might like know some of the stuff, but actually a lot of the stuff I've already learned a lot. It kind of gives you insight on certain foreign policy decisions and things, why certain countries feel certain ways about our country. Anyway, it just gives you really good insight into maybe the way that the rest of the world looks at the United States. So I would definitely recommend checking it out. All right, well, that wraps it up. Gabriel, thanks for coming on the show with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
That wraps up episode 107 of React Native Radio, and we'll see everyone next week.